He lives in Oklahoma City. Spent 3 years in the Air Force, ran a business for 40 years. In 1986, went back and went to college and got 2 MBAs, which is quite an accomplishment. Both of those have to do with things involved with AA. He's spoken thousands of times, and I think he told me he has counseled or spoken to about 15,000 people on how to live and work the third and fourth step. And he comes with a lot of pre-announced acknowledgement, and we certainly welcome them to the Marriott Roundup. So I'm going to turn it over to Earl and leave the podium. Earl?
My name is Earl, and I'm an alcoholic. Hank, I really appreciate you, that analogy you give of my life, but I've only had a little over 7,000 people come through my house, not 15. The flyer says I'm going to go do step 3 and 4, and I'm not going to do that. You know, I was invited down here, and I've talked to quite a few on the phone and so forth, and I think it was Stacy that, well, I think the reason she invited me down here because she thinks I'm an expert on the fourth step, and I am. I looked that word up one time in the dictionary, and it said X means a has-been, and a perk means a little squirt under pressure. So I'm sure I qualify as an expert. You know, best way to explain what I do, and a lot of people, it's still hard for them to understand what I do, and the best way to do that is tell them as how I got this thing started. You hear in Alcoholics Anonymous, the only thing you have to share is your own experience. Well, I've only done one four-step. I worked on it from 2 to 4 hours a day for 3.5 months. I wrote my complete life story. I went paragraph by paragraph and found the exact motive for everything I did in my life. And they wouldn't let me do it wrong. I worked on about 3 weeks. I was doing the perfect four step. And one Friday night at the Color Club, a sponsor asked me how I was doing, and I proceeded to tell him. And when I got through, he said, "You're not taking your inventory, you're taking everybody else's." And he took me to the book on page 67 and said, "Putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. So a situation not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. The inventory was ours, not the other man's." 3 times in that one paragraph. And everything I wrote on my inventory, I did this because you did that. That's what I've done all my life. I did this because you did that. Of course, when he showed that to me, I had to tear it up and start over. He liked to kill me because I worked so hard on it, but they said the way they taught me honesty, they said everything you write on that paper, you write it just like you're going to give it to God because you know He knows. So that's how they taught me honesty. But like I say, I worked on it for 3.5 months. I took my fifth step and it completely changed my life. And that's not what I share with people. In the spring 1984, as a young man moved up in a little farm town north of Houston, he was sober less than 2 years. He'd come in there from Los Angeles with the long hair, the beard, the earring, the fine clothes. He was a heroin addict, been in prison twice. And he'd come in that little farm town, there's no farmer sober 23 years, taught him how to read the book. He darn near memorized, or at least he knew what was on the first 164 pages. And he asked me to be his sponsor, and for long, I knew he had a good program just by talking to him, and then he got chasing a gal that my wife was sponsoring, so I seen a lot of him. And about that same time, as a college professor asked me to be a sponsor and teach him how to do the four step. Well, Michael and I are pretty much in agreement. People get drunk between steps one and four. They either have reservation about the first step or they don't get honest in the fourth step. And anyway, we went out on my patio and I said, Michael, why don't you take Jim through the first four steps and I'm just going to sit back and listen, find out how you were taught. Well, he spent about 3 hours going through the first four steps and ended up handing him a two-page outline, word for word, out of the book, how to do a four step. I just sat there with my mouth open because it was just as thorough as what I had done, except it was real simple. It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy, it's just real simple. He gave the best patterns of resentments of anyone I had ever heard in AA. And I seen it was real good. So we started doing it in my house 5 or 6 times a week, day and night. Drugs would come in and we'd show them how to read the book, how to do the four step. And that went on until November the 2nd, 1984, and he moved to Shreveport. Well, before he left, we got the tape recording out and the big book out, and we put 3 steps on one tape and the 4th step on another tape. And I started to play this tape every Wednesday night for these drunks that's showing up. And I never knew how many was going to show up. I had as many as 21 in my kitchen. But what happens if you do something like that? The tape becomes the expert. The book becomes the expert. I mean, the person becomes the expert. There's 90 experts in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous except the big book. So what I did, I went back the way the old-timers taught the program. And they taught a whole 12-step program. I'm an archivist, and I found a book in Detroit, Michigan about 15 years ago or so. No longer than 15, 20 years ago. First edition, fourth printing, all the pages have come out. It's covered in red lambskin. They had this one page inserted in the front of the book. And the book came from Detroit. And where we got the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in Oklahoma City come from this little pamphlet that was started out in Detroit. I'll read a little bit of it, let give you an idea of what I'm talking about. It said, the first meeting of the Northwest Group was held on the night of October 16, 1941. There were about 20 members present, and since that Thursday night, there's been a meeting every Thursday night of this group in the same hall, regardless of weather, time, or season of the year. In June 1943, a group of members proposed the idea of a separate discussion meeting to more advantageously present the 12 Steps of Recovery program to the new affiliates, and a decision was made to hold a closed meeting for alcoholics only for this purpose. The first discussion meeting of the Northwest Group was held at 10216 Plymouth Road every Monday night without exception. Thereafter, a plan of presentation of the 12 Steps of Recovery program was developed at that meeting. This consisted of dividing the 12 steps up into 4 discussion meetings. They had 2 men talked on the first step. The next week, 2 men talked on the spiritual steps, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 11. The third week, 2 men talked on the inventory and restitution, 4, 10, 8, and 9. In the fourth week, 2 men talked on the 12th step. And every 4 weeks, they repeated themselves. And they become real, real experts at it. Now, let me get back to the paper. Said each division came to be discussed each succeeding Monday night in rotation. This method was so successful that it was adopted first by other groups in Detroit, and then it was adopted throughout the United States. It was published in its entirety in Washington, D.C., in this pamphlet entitled Interpretation of the 12 Steps. Now, this pamphlet comes to Oklahoma City in 1947, and that was the pamphlet they were using when I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's how I was taught AA. It was in this beginner's class. A man continued to do that. He died about 4 or 5 months ago, and this same format has been going on in one group in Oklahoma City since 1947. And also this little pamphlet that inserts out of this pamphlet is reproduced and sold at our intergroup office there in Oklahoma City. So it's been available all these years. And the old timers back in the early days, they didn't care whether he was an alcoholic or not. So they discussed who is an alcoholic, what is an alcoholic, and am I an alcoholic. And well, let me read just a little bit. I'll give you an idea of what I'm talking about and so you bring some continuity. Said, to get the right answer, the prospective member must start the course of instruction with the willingness to learn. He must not have the attitude, you've got to show me. An open mind, forget any and all ideas and notions we already have. Set your opinions aside. Complete honesty is possible that we may fool somebody else, but we must be honest with ourselves, and it's a good time to start being honest with others. Why does an alcoholic drink? Having decided that we're alcoholics, it is well to consider what doctors consider as the reasons why an alcoholic drinks. As an escape from situation in life which he cannot face. As evidence of maladjusted personality, including sexual maladjustments. As a development from social drinking to pathological drinking. As a symptom of major abnormal mental state. As an escape from incurable physical pain. As a symptom of constitutional inferiority. A psychopathic personality, for example, an individual who drinks because he likes alcohol and knows he cannot handle it but does not care. Many times one cannot determine any great and glaring mechanism as the basis why the drinker drinks. But the revealing fact may be elicited that the alcohol is taken to relieve a certain vague restlessness in the individual incident to the friction between his biological and his emotional strains of life. The above reasons are general reasons for the individuality and the personality of an alcoholic is concerned. But these reasons may be divided as follows. A self-pampering tendency which manifests itself in a refusal to tolerate, even temporarily, unpleasant states of mind, such as boredom, sorrow, anger, disappointment, worry, depression, dissatisfaction, and feelings of inferiority and inadequacy. And I want what I want when I want it seems to be the attitude that most alcoholics have. And I'm not going to read any more of that because drunks do not like to be read to for some reason. I know you noticed that when Bob was reading the preface before we started here, that any of y'all go to meetings where they read portions of chapter 5? And you know what happens? I've already read it, I've already heard it, and they don't pay attention to it. They don't. And I can prove it. But you know, well, you know, they always start. They stop at page 60 after the ABCs. Well, the very next sentence says, being convinced we're at step 3. Well, that tells you the first two steps are before you get to page 60. You've got 30 pages of Roman numeral plus 60 pages before you ever get to step 3. But the paragraph right above the ABCs says, our description of the alcoholic, which is the doctor's opinion. The chapter to the agnostic is the beginning of step 2. Our personal adventures before, which is Bill's story, and after. Make clear three pertinent ideals. A, we're alcoholic, couldn't manage our own life. B, that no human power could relieve us of our alcoholism, that God could and would if he were sought. And after is all the stories in the back of the book. So the whole book is about step 2. And I ask the people that come over to my house, I get their name or sobriety date, and I write down there in a little address book, and I change books every year. And I ask them how much the book have they read, and you'd be surprised the answers I get of how much they read. Some 164 pages, some all three chapters. I get all kinds of answers. Most of them are brand new, sober 2 months, 3 months, 6 months. Sometimes sponsors bring them. I've had a lady come over to my house one time, who's sober over 46 years. One of the first ladies got sober in Detroit. In fact, she came to my house two or three times. Good friend of mine. But most of these drunks, they come over, I ask them how much they read. And they're all over my house to learn how to do a four-step. And they're not even ready to do a four-step. And the reason I can say that, because the first thing you do when you come in AA, someone throw a book at you, read this book and get well. If you read the whole thing, you couldn't comprehend it because you got all this stuff going on. But two or three months later, they end up over at my house ready to do a four-step, but they read that book at a point in time when they can't comprehend it. They get over into chapter 5 and they never will go backwards. But what I'm saying more than anything, they have a real weak foundation for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous on steps 1, 2, and 3. And it's sad. But what I started doing after I quit using those tapes, I started going back to the book and teaching the people come over to my house how to read the book, how it was written. Alcoholics Anonymous was 12 and a half years old when I come to AA in Oklahoma City. My wife and I were in the first young people's group. I had more trouble with step 2 than I had any other step. And the reason I had trouble with it was simply because I didn't know it was a problem. And the only way I can really explain that is really my own experience, in that I drank about 13 or 14 years, and the last 7 years I drank, the longest I ever stayed sober was 2 weeks. I drank from the time I got up to the time I went to bed. I wasn't drunk every day. I drank every day. I never got it out of my system. At the end of World War II, I was a full-blown alcoholic. I went into business for myself 2 weeks later. I got married 2 weeks later. And from that point on, I never run out of whiskey. But what happened to me in April 1954, I come to the point in my life, I knew I couldn't drink, I knew I couldn't stop, and I knew it was killing me. And I totally surrendered to the problem. Just didn't have a solution. Back in those days, it was a moral issue. It was not a disease. You had hellfire and damnation in all religions. Had two treatment centers, jail and mental institution. No place to put a drunk. But in April 1954, I was married over 8 years. I had three small children. And because of the crazy things I did, my wife would get drunk at me. And she was a blackout drinker pretty much from the very beginning. And it was all my fault. I come to the point in my life that because of crazy things I did and the way she acted and reacted, and I just give up. I said, you get a divorce, you do whatever you want to, I'm out of here. And I proceeded to try to drink myself to death. Well, what happened? She called Alcoholics Anonymous, and a gal called on her and took her to her first meeting, May the 3rd, 1954, and she stayed sober the rest of her life. But the next week, she asked me if I'd bring the car home, take care of the kids. She wanted to go somewhere. I brought the car home at 7:30. She got in the car and left. She come back at 9:30. I got in the car and left. But the next week, She left a little old pamphlet laying on our bar. I had a bar in my house back in the bootlegging days. I called just close as your telephone, 24 hours a day. And I had a bar in my house, had all kinds of whiskey in it. And she left this little pamphlet laying on my bar. It was printed in 1945 in Birmingham, Alabama, called The Way of Life, and it described Alcoholics Anonymous, but had the 35 questions in the back of it put out by John Hopkins University, and even lying about most of them, I still passed. And I'd call her up middle of the night, drunk, ask Noah about Alcoholics Anonymous, and she wouldn't tell me anything. Her sponsor said he'd just argue with you as long as he's drinking, and I would have. Well, that went on for 5 or 6 weeks, and, you know, curiosity was killing me. I knew she was staying sober. I knew she had all kinds of whiskey, and she was staying sober. I could not understand it. And one Monday, I was just too drunk and too sick to take care of the kids, so I asked her if I'd go with her. And she got permission, so I went to my first AA meeting staggering drunk. And it was a beginner's class. Of course, I didn't hear anything. I said, I'll come back and I'll be sober. And probably the only time in my life I ever tapered off. I always tapered on. So I drank less and less each day until the next Sunday, and Monday I didn't drink, and I went to my second meeting, and that's some things I want to share with you, is the way the old-timers taught this whole 12-step program. They said to read the whole book the first 2 weeks I was in AA, go to 4 beginners meetings and 4 open meetings, and then decide whether you had a problem or not. Well, I think about the second or third day, I moved back home, and we started going to 4 meetings a week. We went to the beginner's class on Monday night, young people's group on Thursday night, open meeting on Friday night, and a sponsorship group on Sunday afternoon. There wasn't any 90 and 90 back in those days. If you did, you had to go to Kansas City or Denver one day a week. We only had 10 meetings in Oklahoma City, 6 in Tulsa, and 29 over the state. We had one Al-Anon meeting within the state. And I read the whole book, and I accepted the first 2 steps. Didn't understand them, I just accepted them. Because I'd surrendered 2 or 3 months before I ever heard of AA. Of course, the last half of the first step didn't apply to me. I come to Alcoholics Anonymous in a brand new Lincoln Continental with the chrome wheel on the back, the most egotistical drunk that ever showed up in Alcoholics Anonymous. Made more money the last year I drank than I had any time up to that point. I've had the highway patrol stop me, take my whiskey away from me, tell me to drive careful. I've had the city police take my whiskey away from me and tell me to drive careful. I understand they don't do that anymore, but that's the way it was whenever I come in. I accepted the first 2 steps, and I got hung up on step 3. I thought I had to understand God. I don't know of anything any more egotistical than a drunk thinking he can understand God, but that's what I was hung up on. From the very beginning, we'd call a killer club. Every time we went to a meeting, we'd stop down on Skid Row and pick up 2 or 3 brand new drunks, talked AA all the way to the clubhouse, went to a meeting and talked AA all the way home. Ended up going to a beginner's class for about 7 years because I was taking brand new people every time we went to a meeting. Third week I was in AA, I went on 12-step call down on Skid Row with an old-timer. And I heard the old-timer telling this drunk how to get sober. But I heard this drunk with all his watermelon conversation tell me how I acted. I could see myself in that drunk. And that's really how I learned that AA was going on 12-step calls, working with brand new people. One of the first things I heard, I don't know what I heard, but at the very beginning they said, had to ask for help in the morning to stay sober that one day and give thanks at night. And I couldn't do that. I was so full of guilt and fear and shame and remorse, I couldn't pray. I was too egotistical to tell anybody I couldn't pray. And I liked that concept of staying sober one day at a time, but because I was always going to quit from now on. It never did work. But when I come in that day, I wanted to drink so bad I could stand it. I couldn't stand it because it was part of everything I did in my life. I said, I'm not going to drink for 5 minutes. I'm not going to drink for 5 minutes. Finally, I got up to an hour. I'm just not going to drink for an hour. It was about 11 months before I done my fifth step, and by then I created a habit of staying sober out of time, and it's 24 times easier to stay sober an hour at a time as a day at a time. I never have asked God to keep me sober. I thanked Him 10 jillion times for keeping me sober. I heard some old drunk say, if you pray, act as if it's going to come true. So I started thanking God for keeping me sober. But when I come in AA, I had all this activity going on these 12-step calls, and they said it's going to be real tough to stay sober over the holidays. You know, I never had any problem with step four. After I was dry for a little while, what really bothered me was step nine. They say it's going to be tough to stay sober over the holidays. Well, I'm a real alcoholic. I stayed sober over the holidays. I got drunk January 2nd, 1955. Apologized to three people drunk. I missed two meetings, and I've been sober ever since. I did not have a slip. 6 days after I got drunk, I went on a 12-step call. A gal called me up. Guy ended up over at her house, passed out. I called the Keller Club. Two old-timers showed up. I poured the drunken back into my car. It hit the boat acreage out west of town. We drove out there, and I told these two old-timers I got drunk. They didn't say, well, Earl, you need to do a four-step. You need to do this. I didn't do that. They spent about 3 or 4 hours telling me the crazy things they did while they drank and how they come into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, how they started applying the steps to their life, and how working the steps changed their life where they didn't have to drink anymore. Well, 6 days after I got drunk, they gave me the solution to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I come to believe if I would just do what they told me they had done, I could get sober. And I went to work on my fourth step the next day, 7 days after I got drunk. I worked on it for 3.5 months. I done my fifth step, and it completely changed my life. Now, I'll tell you, I didn't have a slip. In fact, I don't even believe I joined Alcoholics Anonymous probably until I started working on my fourth step. I do know this, that 6 weeks after I got drunk, I was put on the state committee for 6 years under three different delegates. Because back in the 50s, there was no one wanting to get into service work. I was willing to do anything. And I'm real grateful for that. But getting back to what the book said, most drunks do not know, understand what the book says. The last sentence of the doctor's opinion said, I earnestly advise every alcoholic to read this book through. Doesn't say anything about 164 pages. That's before you ever get to page one. Now, Bill wrote this as a textbook, or it turned out to be a textbook, but on page 29, it tells you why you should read the whole book. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. If you don't find it on page 29, on page 50, it says in our personal stories, you'll find a wide variation the way each teller approaches and conceives of a power greater than himself. So the whole book is about step two. And you may not agree with any of the stories, but you cannot disagree with their experience of how they found a power greater than themselves. And whatever you believe in, when you come in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, it is not good enough to keep you sober, so you have to change it. In the foreword to the first edition, it's precisely how we have recovered. It's the main purpose of this book. Main purpose. And we only have one textbook. Bill wrote in the foreword of the 12 and 12 in 1952, based on the success of the first edition of the Big Book, it would become our basic textbook. He also wrote in the foreword 12 and 12 that it would be used as a reference book. So the simplicity of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is in our textbook. That came out on the dust jacket of the second printing in 1955. It's been on every hardbound dust jacket cover since 1955. It's a basic textbook of Alcoholics Anonymous. So what I've tried to do, I've tried to share with these drunks that come over at my house what the book says. I've tried to keep my opinion completely out of it. Because God knows we have over 1 million sponsors in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And every one of them has a different program. In the early days, you know, nowhere in this book does it say get a sponsor. It teaches you how to be one. All the emphasis in the early days was put on you had to get a sponsor, to someone to show you how to work the steps in order to get sober. But if you wanted to stay sober, you had to help somebody else. In chapter 7, you have about 50 or 60 things of what to do and what not to do. And the way you learned the program, or my perception of how I was taught the program, was that I couldn't stay sober unless I tried to help somebody else. And I didn't learn the program of Alcoholics Anonymous by reading about it, or talking about it, or praying about it, or thinking about it. I did that by practice. And I just don't know of any shortcuts to practice. But there is a difference, and difference doesn't make it right or wrong. We've got more members of AA today than we've ever had. And God knows we need it, and we probably don't help 10% of the alcoholics out there still drinking. But I'll try to share with the people that come over to my house what this book says, and I don't want to get my time goofed up here, because I told him I was going to cut this off. I asked Lorraine to help me read up here. I've had 8 eye operations and a corneal transplant in this last eye, and I just don't see how to read very good. And I asked her to help me read a little bit, and I'm real grateful that she did that. I have a 2-page outline that I give to the people that come over to my house. I mailed it to somebody down here and I forgot, and it's been misplaced. So you don't have an outline I'm going to give. And it's just an outline. It's it's straight out of the book. And I try to teach people what the book says, not what I think. Bill's story is so important because it gives a course of action that he took to get sober and stay sober. When he wrote this book in 1939, most of the drunks at that time could not relate to Bill's white light experience. So in the second printing of the first edition of the Big Book, March 1st, 1941, Appendix 2 was added to the back of the book. Page 569 and 570. I'm going to ask Lori to read that out. I'll mark that. It'll give me a chance to kind of catch my...
569. Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm Lori and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello.
Spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Thank you, Lori. The reason I had her read that is because that is the result of the first 11 steps. Sometimes I forget to tell you what I'm going to do. I go briefly through the first 11 steps. I go real heavy on chapter 5 on step 3 and 4. Step 12 says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of the first 11 steps. I said the only time you can practice any of these steps is this minute. The only time you can ever find God is right now. And they divide the third step and made a decision to turn your will, which was your thoughts. The only time you could do that is right now. And your actions are the sum total of the way you've acted and reacted all your life. I did not know what they were until I worked steps 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. I did not know what my life was. But I guarantee you can go to a meeting anywhere in the United States today on the third step and some drunk and say, all you got to do is make a decision. But you know you didn't decide to go to New York tomorrow. If you don't go, you don't go. No decision is made until you take the action. And on time you can turn your will over to God is this minute. And doing steps 1, 2, 3 is kind of like going to church on Sunday and doing what you darn well please the rest of the week. Because 1, 2, 3 is 25% of nothing. It is a whole 12-step program. And the old-timers taught this as a way of life. It was a... process. It was taking these steps was not an event. They were a part of a process. Bill put this paragraph in here telling you exactly what he's going to do. At the page 43, the last paragraph, says, once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against first drink, except in a few rare cases. Neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. If you people are having trouble staying sober, and you really understand that, that might be able to save your life, because that takes you right into chapter 2, the agnostic, the most important chapter in the book. When I come in AA in the 1954, I guarantee there's a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous, a lot older than I, that couldn't read or write from the Depression days. And I was taught that you explain chapter 2 the agnostic one sentence at a time, one paragraph at a time, and ask yourself exactly what it means to you. And that's where you really put you on the right pathway to find a power greater than yourself. First paragraph, page 44. If when you honestly want to and find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably an alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Page 45. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Obviously, but where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is all about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself that will solve your problem. Dual addicted people, last two sentences, page 42. It says, practicing spiritual principles will solve all your problems. Page 46, last paragraph. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with Him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. Took means to complete with action. Chapter 2, the agnostic, is all about step 2. Took other simple steps is 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. That's what the book says. Page 53. When we become alcoholics, crushed with self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition either God is everything or else He is nothing. God either is or He isn't. What is your was our choice to be? Page 55. For deep down, every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship, of other things, but in some form or other, it is there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We found the great reality deep down within us. Most drunks have more trouble with step 2 than have anything else simply because they revert back to willpower. And on time you can turn your will and your life over the care of God is this minute. I cannot emphasize enough the importance of chapter 2, the agnostic, especially for you new people. Because as long as you try to do things with your own willpower, you will continue to have problems. You know, I didn't read the chapter to the wise for 5 years because it didn't apply to me. I guarantee you, on relationships, is probably one of the most beautiful chapters in the book, on relationship. I can say that. I was married over 47 years to a drunk. So I'm not just yakking. Chapter 5. Rarely have I seen a person thoroughly follow our path. Not go by that, huh? People in here have trouble staying sober. If you ever take another drink, it will be because of selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. That's why it says on step 10, page 84, we continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. In chapter 5, it talks about dishonesty on page 58. It talks about selfishness on page 62. It talks about resentments on page 64. It talks about fear on page 67. If you ever take another drink, it will be because of one of those four things. And that's what we find solutions for. Step 4 does not have anything to do with the crazy ass 9 things that we did while we were drinking. You can't change anything you did last week or last month or last year or 10 years ago. It's not what you did, it's why you did it. If you find out why you acted and reacted the way you did, then you can change that. Step 4, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory. Whatever, drunks have a lot of trouble with that simply because when they see the word moral, they think of immoral. Immoral is the complete opposite of what you've been thinking about. Because you can't change anything you did, you can't change anything anybody else did either. That's why step 3 and 4 goes together, is simply because if you decide to turn your will and your life over the care of God, as you discover the things you've been doing wrong in writing the fourth step, and you quit doing those things, every day gets better. The fourth step is not any big deal if every day gets better. Lee put it so beautiful last night. It's not step 4, step 5. But, you know, everything you write on that paper, it's you know, God knows. It's not what you did, it's why you did it. And if you start to understand, the old timers, they didn't care whether you done four step in two days, 2 weeks, 2 years, or whatever. They put all the emphasis, as you discover the things you've been doing wrong, quit doing them. And I'll tell you what, some of that stuff, it started way, way back there. Now, I was the biggest liar on earth when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't start lying when I started drinking, I started lying when I started talking. You know, if you go to a fourth step, I think it's real, real important that you understand what the 12 and 12 says, because it is such a beautiful reference book. And I ask them to read step 4 and step 8 in the 12 and 12, because step 8 is the kind of harm we did to other people. And if you do the fourth step like it says in the book, you make a 8-step list as you're doing your fourth step. That's why I don't care for these one opinionated guides that are put out by different people, different places, things. The simplicity and the instructions in this book are so simple if you understand it. Now in the 12 and 12, it talks about the 7 basic instincts used to excess. Pride, greed, lust, anger, envy, gluttony, and sloth. Pride being number 1. And the way we express pride is rationalization and self-justification. That's lying to yourself. And that's a motivating factor that causes us to act and react the way we do to all situations, all of our life. It didn't start when we started drinking, it started when we were about 2 years old. I want what I want when I want it. Feed me, change my diaper. Give you an example. You steal a dime out of your mother's purse and you're 8 years old to get some candy and you're full of guilt and fear and shame. And 12 years old, you get a $0.50. 15 years old, you get $5. My gosh, I deserve it. same action on the same habit over and over and over, and we become immune to it. This dishonesty of lying to yourself. Bill said nothing counts but thoroughness and honesty. Nothing counts. And if you're going to do a four-step, it's impossible to do a four-step wrong. It depends on how honest you are with yourself. And you can't cheat anybody except yourself. I divide the four-step up in three things. I try to keep it simple. Resentments, fears, and faults. Faults is the way you express resentments and fears. If you don't understand what the problem is, you're not ever going to do anything about it. We're going to take a break. I told him I would say it on the right time, so we got a little bit to go. Page 58, if you have decided you want what we have, or willing to go to any length, if you're willing to go to any length, then you're ready to take certain steps. As some of these we bought, we thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us tried to hold on to our old ideals, and the result was nil until we let go, absolutely. And I guarantee you, that's one of the biggest hang-ups for drunks, in that they just don't want to give up some of these old ideals. God, you take care of that, but I'm going to take care of this. And unless you're willing to go to any lengths, the grace of God cannot work in your life. Half measures avail you nothing. Half measures do not give you 50% of this program. Here are the steps we took. Doesn't say here are the steps we read about or we talked about or we prayed about. Took means to complete with action. They are a way of life. It's a process. And the only time you can practice these steps is 200 words is right now. If you leave out some of them, you're cheating yourself. And the only way you really learn this program is to practice it, trying to help somebody else like Lee was talking about last night. Well, let me show you how step three and step four go together. Page 64, talking about resentments. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. Well, on page 62, on step three, it says selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our trouble. Selfishness and self-centeredness is the cause, and resentments is the effect. I got tickled about these treatments a long time ago. You got to express your feelings. Feelings are the direct result of your actions. Resentments is the effect. And selfishness and self-centeredness is the cause. So it destroys, from its stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. And when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. That's just the way we get sober, spiritually, mentally, and physically. Some people think we get sober first physically, but you know, if you're an alcoholic, don't make any difference. If you're born an alcoholic or you build up a tolerance by drinking too much, too often, too long, and you become an alcoholic. I know for myself, and the best way I explained it, in June 1955, I had an infection on my hand. I went to the doctor, got shot penicillin. It liked to kill me. My eyes swollen too. My body swelled up all over. And he said, if I ever used penicillin again, it'd kill me. And I'd used it dozens of times before then. It did the job it was supposed to do, but in June 1955, I built up a tolerance to it, and I become allergic to it. You know, I didn't have to get a book. I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't go to meetings. Just cold turkey. And we don't get well mentally because we try to solve all our problems with willpower. The way we get sober, spiritually, mentally, and physically. What is a spiritual malady? Self-will. One of the results of step three is we made a decision to turn our will over the care of God. There's other results of step three, and I'll show them to you when we get to them. But that's how step three and four go together. Let's turn back to page 60. That's where we started, page 60, wasn't it? Always have some fun out of this. You got married people in here? They all understand the B part of the ABCs? You understand that? You put God-like attributes on another human being, expecting him to act the way you want him to, and he don't act that way. You understand that? Okay. We'll have to explain it. So the side of that coin is, I'm going to do it my way if it kills me. Right? Being convinced we were at step three, which is we decide to turn our will and our life over the care of God as we understood him. Just what do we do and how do we do it? The first requirement, that we be convinced any life on self-will can hardly be a success. If you're not convinced, you're not going to turn your will and your life over the care of anybody. The first requirement that you be convinced any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, you're almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though your motives are good. Most people try to live with self-propulsion. Each person, like an actor, wants to run the whole show. He's forever trying to arrange the lights, the scenery, the ballet, the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished. You know, if my wife had just acted the way I wanted to, I'd have been all right. But she rebelled, and I got drunk. You know, the interesting thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, I know for about 20, 25 years I read that, and my brain read it, but it interpreted it as something else. And about 15, 20 years ago, I really started to understand what he was saying. Said each person like an actor wants to run the whole show. My brain said each person like a director wants to run the whole show. I guarantee you that changed the whole meaning of that for me. It may not do anything for you, but I'm talking about 25 years of meaning one thing, and then it looked changed again on me. Back to the book. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. And trying to make these arrangements, our actor may be sometimes quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest, and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be is more likely to have various traits. On page 60, 61, and 62, it tells us exactly what we do and how we do it, how we try to influence other people, how we try to manipulate other people. And it's talking about step three, because on page 60 it says we're now at step three. On page 63 it says we're now at step three. But you know, Bill, in the 12 and 12, on step four, he said so much more beautiful than I've ever been able to find anywhere else except in this here. And I think I will, on page 53 in the 12 and 12, on the fourth step, Bill explains that better than anything I've ever heard of the way we try to manipulate people. Of the 12 and 12, page 53, but it's formed this. It is from this twisted relation with family, friends, and society at large that many of us have suffered the most. We have especially been stupid and stubborn about them. The primary fact that we fail to recognize is our total inability to form a true partnership with another human being. Our egomania digs to disastrous pitfalls. Either we insist on dominating the people we know, or we depend on them far too much. If we lean too heavily on people, they will sooner or later fail us, for they are human too and cannot possibly meet our incessant demands. In this way, our insecurity grows and festers. Then we habitually try to manipulate others to our own willful desire, and they revolt, and they resist us heavily. Then we develop hurt feelings, a sense of persecution, a desire to retaliate. And as we redouble our efforts at control and continue to fail, our suffering becomes acute and constant. We have not once sought to be one in the family, to be a friend among friends, to be a worker among workers, to be a useful member of society. Always we have tried to struggle to the top of the heap or to hide underneath it. This self-centered behavior blocked a partnership relation with any of those about us. Of true brotherhood, we had small comprehension. And I think that's a good place to stop, and we'll come back in the middle of step three. See two. And we stopped after I read that one page out of the 12 and 12 on page 53. But going back to page 61 on step three, it said, what usually happens is the show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think that life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault is sure the other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, and self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Is he now a victim of delusion, aching satisfaction, and happiness out of this world, if he only manages it well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not even in his best moments a producer of confusion rather than harmony? Our actor is self-centered and egocentric. What's that mean? Each person, like an actor, wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the scenery, the ballet, the rest of the players in his own way. This tells us exactly how we act and react. On the next page, on page 62, it puts a name on it. Selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our trouble. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-seeking, self-delusion, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find. Sometime in the past, we made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. Durna, he did that. I was a victim, Laura, when I come in that day. You're a victim? No, I was a real victim. When I was in high school, 3 weeks past 17 years old, like one semester finishing school, I went worked before school, worked after school. 3 weeks past 17, I married a 15-year-old girl, real mature for my age. Not going to buy that. Married about 6 months, and she started chasing boys, and I become a victim. I was married a little over a year, and I joined the Air Force in World War II, and I become a drunk in the Air Force in World War II. She followed me to some of the air bases that I attended. Her behavior still continued the same way, and I was in the Air Force a little over 2 years, and my grandfather died, and I was able to get a furlough to come home. I was married about a little over 3.5 years, and I had my father get a divorce. I was too young to get a divorce. Married 3.5 years and too young to get a divorce. But I'd become a full-blown drunk in the Air Force, World War II. And I had no self-esteem. I didn't treat women right. I didn't treat anybody right. All I had to tried to drink. Everything I did was connected with drinking. And when I got out of the Air Force in World War II, I was a full-blown drunk. Now, I had met a lady while I was divorced. I was divorced 15 months, and 2 weeks after I got out of the Air Force, I got married to this lady that I had met. And what happened to me, I was married to her for a little over 8 years in April 1954. I come to a point in my life, I knew I couldn't drink, and knew I couldn't stop, and I knew it was killing me. And I totally surrendered to the problem, but when I worked on my fourth step, I worked on it for about 3 weeks. Everything I wrote on this paper, I did this because you did that. I did this because you did that. What I discovered, my first wife did not have anything to do with the crude behavior I took into that second marriage. I don't believe I would have understood the third step had I not done my fourth step wrong. Because it enabled me to become responsible for my own actions. Now, the old timers back in those days, the way they really taught acceptance and everything was serenity prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, that's person, places, and things. Courage to change the things I can, that's me. And the wisdom to know the difference. I would not have understood step three had I not done that wrong. And of course, there are a lot of victims that come in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I don't want to just downgrade that or anything like that. But we can't change anything that we did in this world. We cannot change anything anybody else did. And what I'm talking about, we have to learn to accept other people exactly the way they are. I think with that, Laura, I'll go ahead and let you read 449, which an awful lot of alcoholics use today.
Okay. And acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I am disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact of my life unacceptable to me, and I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be at this moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing, happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my alcoholism, I could not stay sober. Unless I accept life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world as on what needs to be changed in me and in my attitudes.
How about 452, last two paragraphs?
Okay. Acceptance is the key to my relationship with God today. I never just sit and do nothing while waiting for Him to tell me what to do. Rather, I do whatever is in front of me to be done, and I leave the results up to Him. However, it turns out that that's God's will for me. I must keep my magic magnifying mind on my acceptance and off my expectations, for my serenity is directly proportional to my level of acceptance. When I remember this, I can see I've never had it so good. Thank God for AA.
Thank you, Lori. Thank you. Back to page 62. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourself. The alcoholic is an extreme example. A self will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. There's 78 we must in this book and a whole bunch of we have to's. So God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without His aid. Many of us have moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would like to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing and trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. And here is the how and why of it. First of all, we have to quit playing God. You know, on page 60, it said the first requirement, we be convinced any life on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we're almost always in collision with something or somebody. We got 2.5 pages that tells us precisely the way we act and react, how we try to manipulate other people to get our way, or we try to depend on people to get our own way. Then it ends up, first of all, we have to quit playing God. And when you try to figure out how someone else should act, you're trying to figure out what God's will is for them, and that is a spiritual malady. Right in the middle of the same paragraph, it gives us the solution. Next, we decide to hereafter in this drama life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We're His agents. He is the father. We are His children. And you know, this is the process of coming to believe in a power greater than yourself. So most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of a new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, He provided what we needed if we kept close to Him and performed His work well. Established on such a footing, we become less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we become interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we begin to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and hereafter, we were reborn. There's 10 results in that one paragraph if, first of all, we quit playing God. I guess I can do this since I'm... This is an awful big kitchen today. Let's all do the third step together. God, I offer myself to Thee, to build with me and to do with me as Thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. The interesting thing about the third step prayer that the early timers in AA didn't use it. They started doing that in the 60s. The way the old timers practiced the third step prayer, they said selfishness and self-centeredness was the root of our trouble. And the only way we could overcome that was to practice selflessness, was trying to help a brand new drunk. And that's the way they taught the third step, was taking the action for helping a brand new drunk. And that's the way you learn the program, was trying to help a brand new drunk. Trying to learn what the book says. The people that come into Alcoholics Anonymous are on step 1 and 2. They're on step 1 and 2. And taking the action on the rest of the steps is how they find out what a power greater than themselves is. The next paragraph said, we found it very desirable to take this spiritual step with the understanding person. I think it is real important to make that a commitment to go ahead and work the rest of the steps. Somehow we didn't get the outline made, and I'm going to send it to some people I have a 2-page outline I always give out. And it seems to be lost, and but some of the people here will have a copy, and they said they'd pass it around. But on page 65, it has an outline, just like the ones I write, and it's all straight out of the book. So if you understand what the book says, you can make your own outline. The first column on page 65, the only thing it lists there is people. But on bottom page 64, it says we listed people, institution, and principals with whom we were angry. So column one is who we resent. Column two is why we resent them. What we're looking for is the patterns of the way we acted and reacted. And the patterns for the things that we're acting and looking for is on page 67. It says, where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, or fighting? Where were we to blame? So there's five things that we look for. We do not take the other person's inventory. What we're looking for is find out why we acted and reacted the way we did so we can change it. This outline on the third column is how we react to these resentments. In the paragraph right above the outline, it says, was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambition, our personal notions which had been interfered with? So that's the third column of how each resentment affects us. The fourth column, when we get a resentment, it's all out of fear. We're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-seeking, self-delusion, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. So Bill made a real simple outline here, and that's all it is, just an outline. Lori said she had just started on her fourth step. And maybe some here that hadn't even started on one. But I had Robert take me to the store this morning. I forgot to bring a spiral notebook. And what I tell people to start on their fourth step, give them a spiral notebook and write down 0 to 10. Put in their birthday as 0 to 10 years old. Turn the page, 10 to 13, 13 to 16, 16 to 19. And that's your resentment list. First 10 years, mother, father, brother, sister, next door neighbor, first grade school teacher. That gets you started. It don't mean anything to anybody. That gets you started on your 8-step resentment list. What you're looking for is patterns. And it says, go back as far back as we can remember. Well, 0 to 10 will really kind of lock that in there. You may have your father's name down there 40 times. You don't have to write about it 40 times. You write, you self-seeking. Where were you dishonest? Where were you fighting? Where were you to blame? You write about it once or twice, and you go find it's the same thing and the same habit over and over and over, because this rationalization is self-justification of lying to yourself. Give you another example. Married 5 years, divorced 5 years. You don't go back to that last year of divorce. You go back to the very beginning of that relationship. Where were you self-seeking? Where were you fighting? Where were you to blame? What you're looking for is the way you acted, the way you reacted, so you can change it. It is your inventory, not anybody else's. The book is so simple, I think, on that, because what you're looking for is patterns. You go back as far back as you can remember. And the emphasis was really put about change as you find out what you've been doing wrong to change it. And then you find solutions to selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. That's where you find the solutions in changing.